Fear the Walking Dead Season 2 Episode 3 is over, but we're just getting started here on the Fear the Walking Dead post-show recap. And now, here are the guys who no longer have a hankering for crabs. I'm Rob Cisterino. Here is Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
I mean, that was really, really gross. And I'm not like a huge crabs guy to begin with. I know that might surprise some people, but I'm really out on crabs now.
And you once ate a scorpion.
I once ate a scorpion and it tasted like a crappy crab. I would rather eat a million scorpions than eat any of those crabs that were touching that zombie.
Yeah.
Although I don't think that I would get up to a million scorpions. Got to imagine eventually, even if they like depoisoned, devenomed the scorpions, there would be enough residual venom that ultimately, probably at like 1,000 scorpions, I'd be dead.
It was a real perpetual motion machine where the zombie was eating crabs, but the crabs were also eating the zombie.
Uh-huh.
Zero-sum game.
Yeah. Yeah, the antelope eat the grass. Yeah, it was a real circle of life moment.
Circle of death.
Circle of death. One of the things that's great about Fear the Walking Dead, I feel like, is sometimes you get this sense that they're making this show, and they're like, is anybody really watching this thing? Let's test it out by having a zombie walk around on an army of crabs and see if that gets any pickup on Monday morning.
Yeah.
Did anyone notice that there was a crab zombie on television last night?
Yes. All right. So, Josh, here we are to talk about episode number 3 of FTWD. And yeah, we finally got the convergence of the Walking Dead webisode with the action going on here.
Yeah, the Flying Dead. It came in for a landing, a rough landing.
It certainly did.
It was a tough landing for those guys. Most of them did not make it. And even the people who did make it, Kind of didn't make it.
We'll see where it goes with the saga of Alex, who was the girl that was on, or the woman that was on the plane with Jake.
And a mysterious woman named Alex alone on an island. I feel like I've heard that before.
Yes. She was part of this plane crash. And then we got to see a little bit of her perspective. But Josh, to me, I really feel like the timeline doesn't match up. Do you get that?
What's the problem with the timeline? Lay it out for me.
Okay. So we saw from Nick's POV where it was the end of the webisode, right? The
right.
Last episode of the webisode was Nick's POV. And what was that, like episode 3 or episode 4?
I think it was
The Walking Dead.
It was when they were in lockdown in the community, in the neighborhood, after a little bit of a time jump. It was like a 9-day time jump or something like that.
Okay. How much time has passed since that point?
Probably got to be a couple weeks at this point, right?
A couple weeks.
I mean, I'd imagine it's been like 2 weeks at least.
I mean, I just don't know how Alex is alive at this point.
It's a shock. It's a real
surprise.
She's
doing okay. Everybody else is doing not so good.
I mean, the bigger surprise is that Jake is still alive, even though he's been very badly burned. He has been seriously, seriously burned, and he is somehow still hanging in there.
Yes. Well, I was actually very surprised to see Jake in such bad shape, because it really looked as though he was like the central character in the Fear of the Walking Dead webisode. And actually that Jake, a.k.a. Brendan, is a friend of the podcast. We can
I
say
know.
This.
Oh, are we just going to say that? We're just going to put it out there into the universe?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, well, Brendan is our good friend. We met Brendan at the Live Know-It-Alls in New York a couple weeks ago. He's a really, really nice guy, plays Jake. I felt really bad because I have just trashed The Flying Dead at every possible opportunity.
Not the performances.
The format was really rough. I actually did, as I promised in last week's Fear of the Walking Dead podcast, I did go and I sat down and I watched all of The Flying Dead. But I did it after I watched this week's episode, Rob. I did it out of sequence, and I wanted to do it that way because I wanted to see if I could enjoy this week's episode of Fear of the Walking Dead independent of really knowing anything that had happened on The Flying Dead. Did I have to see the webisode in order to fully appreciate episode 3 of Fear of the Walking Dead? That was the experiment that I wanted to test out.
And what did your hypothesis prove?
I think I probably would have appreciated a little more if I had seen the webisodes first, but I think that it does work on its own. And I think that really now the question for me is like, how would I have felt if I had never seen Lost before? if I had never watched Lost before this episode of Fear the Walking Dead, because as I had hoped for in last week's podcast, I really wanted this episode to be evocative of Lost. I wanted it to pay homage to Lost. I definitely feel like this episode winked and nodded at Lost. throughout the episode, multiple points throughout the episode. I was happy to see that. I thought that was fun.
So I was definitely bummed out to see our buddy Brendan Meyer, who played Jake. Does not look like Jake is going to make it.
You know, even if like that boat finds rescue, or like secretly in that lifeboat they have like lots of paddles and Alex is really strong and she's able to catch up with Strand's boat and, you know, get back on board the JSS Abigail, it looks like it's really not great for Jake. Jake is, he's badly burned, he's beaten up, there are multiple points where the people that they survived the crash with want to throw him overboard or even just bludgeon his face in. I got to imagine that Jake is not long for life here.
No, it does not seem like it.
Very sad, because his storyline in Fear of the Flying Dead is he is trying to reunite with his parents. He's trying to get to safety. He's, you know, flying to Phoenix in order to find some safety from this impending apocalypse that is starting to happen all around them. Nobody really understands what this flu thing is. And then his mom can't get on the plane because Alex has bought the final ticket onto the plane, and that's supposed to be his mom's seat. So he crashes without any family. And you'd think that maybe things will work out for him because he does seem to be the main character of that thing. And no, it's just tragedy after tragedy, as it tends to be here in the zombie apocalypse.
It's a real swerve, because it was advertised that somebody from the webisodes was going to be a major character on Fear the Walking Dead.
Right. And by the end of this thing, the only two that are still alive are like left for death. They've been literally stranded.
Yes. Yes.
So are either of these people going to factor into the main thing? I don't know. You know, jury's out. I wonder if we'll see Alex again, but I think that if we do see her again, gotta imagine it's without Jake.
This was a question that came up on Fear the Talking Dead.
Wait. Are we doing this? Are you in this? Are you back? Are you back, baby? Oh my God. You're like Nick. You can't stay away. You're addicted to Fear the Talking Dead.
I'm an adrenaline junkie. Right.
You're a Hardwick junkie.
Yeah. Okay, so Fear the Talking Dead this week. Well, first off, my good friend Chris Jericho was on the panel.
Chris Jericho saved my brother's life once. I think I've said that on a podcast before.
I don't think you told the details. Oh, no, that's the mosh pit, right?
Yeah, it's the mosh pit. Yeah, see,
the
you
mosh
know.
Pit, yeah. Chris Jericho, he is one of our fellow podcasters on the podcast network, home of post-show recaps on Podcast One.
So he's really just a favorite among, you know, you and I.
Yes. And yeah.
Hometown hero.
And he's really into Fear of the Walking Dead. Like, he takes it very seriously.
Who's his favorite character?
I think he likes all the characters that are like the people that are really taking it seriously.
Big Salazar guy.
I think so.
Yeah, he loves Danny Sal.
And then also on the panel, they had the actor who plays Chris, Lorenzo Henry. And then they had Michelle Ang, who plays Alex.
Yeah.
And Chris Hardwick asked the poll question of, okay, what do you guys think? Is she going to be on any more episodes? I don't want to know.
Don't tell me. I definitely don't know the answer.
I definitely know the answer. She's in the opening credits.
Oh, well,
she's
there you go. All right. Well, that's the answer. Okay. So we're getting more Alex. You're not just going to put somebody in the opening credits once and then never again, especially if it's a new character.
She wasn't a special guest star.
She's just straight up Michelle Ang as Alex.
Yeah, no, and not even as Alex. She gets the credits.
She gets the closing billing.
She's in the credits.
That would have been even better. That would have been really great.
So I think we're going to see more of her.
All right, that strikes me as we're going to see more of Alex. That's cool. I like that she seems like a badass.
The same show that took Steven Yeun out of the credits. Yeah. They put her in the credits.
Yeah, they put her in the credits. You can't. And let's be fair, not the same show. Cousins.
Cousins. Sure.
They're related. Yeah, all right. Okay, well, I can get down with that. I mean, Alex seems like a badass. She survives in this situation much longer than you and I can really plausibly put our minds around, that it's been at best a couple of weeks since that plane crashed, and she's still hanging in there, and she's, you know, in on that, like, sandy dune planet, whatever that was, like the Tatooine of Fear the Walking Dead, running away from Tusken Raiders, and she's good, and she's fine. She somehow lived with crab zombies and had no problem.
Yeah, and where was Jake that whole time?
Jake Lloyd?
Well, don't ask about where Jake Lloyd is. That's not a happy story.
It's not a happy story. There's been some developments on that front. You can Google it. Jake was like, I guess he just was like in seclusion. Like, she just like had him like behind a bush or something like that. Like, Jake, don't move.
You can't really do much.
Stay in this boat. I'll come get you in a little while.
I have to go explore Tatooine and then I'll come back and get you.
Yeah, I'll come find you.
Okay, so a couple different things going on in this episode. We had the dynamic of where Travis that he was the only person that was going to be able to repair the boat. There was some sort of filtration issue going on, and there was a zombie mucking up the works underneath the boat. Did you understand what exactly what system that was? Was that for the water filtration, or was that something required for the electrical system on the boat?
For me, I mean, maybe you can help me out. That felt like, was this not a waste issue?
A waste issue.
I mean, when he's digging his hand around in some stuff, it's really, there's some grim, dark things that he is pulling out of there, and it doesn't feel like it's solely zombie entrails. Some of that felt like human waste to me.
I don't think that was necessarily the case. I think it was more of, there was an intake underneath the boat that had been mucked up with, you know, the zombie getting stuck in there, and then he had to dislodge the zombie's hand from there.
Yeah,
I felt like that was the issue. I did not get any sort of
that might
sewage
just be a
issues.
Yeah, it's just a personal problem that for whatever reason, I'm just thinking of sewage as I'm watching this thing. But no, I think, you know, there is definitely a walker that is trapped underneath there. We know that water zombies are a thing, waterlogged zombies, and, you know, make your own waterlogged joke there. That is a thing. So they rode over one of those. It got caught. Somehow Travis is the only guy who can fix this thing.
Yes, Travis. He is sort of like, to go back to, we talked about last week, that this is some sort of like water Star Trek, almost like a Sequest DSV type operation where, okay, there's a problem and Strand is like the captain of the ship. He's like Kirk, and he's like, Scotty, how long is it going to take to fix? And Travis is like, I just can't do it. You need more time.
Seems like more of an O'Brien type.
That's true, but they really didn't ride O'Brien the same way that Kirk really rode Scotty.
Yeah. Well, Strand is a real jerk to Travis here, where he's like, could you just do this thing already?
Just fix the boat.
Just fix the damn boat. And Travis is like, dude, I'm doing my best over here. You don't have to be so mean to me. And Strand's like, ugh, fine. You guys are all so sensitive, you Manawas.
Yeah.
What do you mean, we Manawas?
I really feel for Strand here quite a bit throughout Fear of the Walking Dead, because
Strand is just like, he is, you know, it's, he's at his last strand with these people. He's getting, you know, frequently frustrated with these guys.
Yeah, because he is just constantly like, do you guys not get what's going on here? They're like, come on, let's just bring more people on the boat.
We don't have room on the boat. Stop inviting people onto the boat. It's not your boat. It's my boat.
Yeah, they're like kids coming down. Like, Dad, we got this puppy. Can we keep it? Like, no.
No.
We have seven. We can't. We have so many puppies.
Yeah. Where are you going to walk the puppy? We're on the ocean.
Yeah.
How are you going to do that?
Well, it was such a great scene when he just came out with a hatchet and cut the rope.
It was amazing. Like, it felt like he was really embodying the audience at that point, where he's like, nope. Yeah. Nope. Not doing it. We are not taking these people on. Not happening. Doesn't make any sense. Cut them loose.
Because are we supposed to not like Strand? Because he's far and away my favorite character on this show.
I feel like we're not supposed to like Strand, or at least we're supposed to distrust Strand. And I do not trust Strand at all,
right.
But I really like him. I think that he's pragmatic. He sees things for what they are. He doesn't take BS very well. He seems like he's got a plan. He's one of very few people out here that has an active plan that he is working toward. I like a man with some mystery to him, Rob. I always think that that's a fun thing. So yeah, I like Strand. I don't trust him at all, but I like him a lot more than I like pretty much anybody else on the show.
Oh yeah, he's the best, far and away, on this show.
And he just has like a great voice where he's like, I talk like this all the time. And I always have very strange pronunciations.
Yeah, he's really good, Strand.
And my intonations. And everything I say sounds much smarter because of the way I say it.
So because of the problems with the boat, they're sort of just stranded, no pun intended, in the water. And
gonna get a lot of mileage out of that.
Yeah. They did on Fear the Walking Dead as well, and Fear the Talking Dead as well.
Yeah.
But they go off on an away mission where it's almost like a field trip, where Daniel is gonna take the kids to go to the shore and then go and look through suitcases.
Okay, kids, this is Tatooine. This was the very famous desert planet from the first film in the Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of those movies. Yeah, film class with Salazar.
And while he says, okay, everybody needs to stay within my eyesight, that very quickly goes out the window.
Yeah. Well, he's the only adult there, and he's out there with the kid who is proving himself to be a bit of a homicidal maniac. He's out there with a young teenage woman who plays with the CB radio, and when she's not playing with the CB radio, she's probably thinking about playing with the CB radio. And a drug addict.
That's not a euphemism, is it?
No.
Okay. All right.
And a drug addict.
Yeah.
So the three people that he's out there with are an irascible bunch of
troubled kids.
Troubled kids.
Sure.
At-risk youths, as Nick would call them.
Josh, do you know why on Fear the Walking Dead, dress-up is such a big thing?
They love it, don't
they?
They
love costumes.
Yeah. There's a lot of cosplay on Fear of the Walking Dead.
They really love
it. Like, eventually, you got to imagine there's going to be some sort of competition. There's going to be like some sort of like cosplay tournament is going to happen. But that's right. And when they were in the neighborhood back in the first season, didn't Chris and Alicia, they were just like going around like trying on like prom clothes, basically. It's like, all right, well, prom is almost here. Let's put this stuff on. And she's like got her dress on and she's looking in the mirror and Chris has like a suit and they're trashing the house. And now we're doing that again where everyone's like trying on. Like Nick has like his Frank Lapidus clothes on.
Yeah.
It was great. He was doing a really good Frank Lapidus. He kind of looks like a young Frank Lapidus. Terrific.
Yes.
You know, he needs more chest hair, but that pilot shirt really looked good.
Yeah.
It's coming.
In six seasons of the regular Walking Dead, I don't think we've had any scenes of the characters just doing dress up.
No, I mean, they definitely have like tried out other people's stuff before.
Yeah,
like,
Abraham did put on that jacket this season.
Yeah, so that has happened for sure. And I mean, very famously, like Daryl and Beth going around and drinking the moonshine and futzing around with all the stuff at the posh golf club. The country club. So, I mean, like, there's definitely this thing that happens in these Walking Dead shows where people stumble upon a place that has been abandoned because apocalypse, and they just try all the stuff. They just go around putting their feet up on things, really dirtying the place up with no regard for who this stuff might actually belong to.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the repercussions of the actions of these at-risk youths. Yeah. And let's start with Chris, who's really turned into a bit of a homicidal maniac in the aftermath of his mom dying. Are you excited by these developments for Chris, or are you troubled?
I'm both. I'm both troubled and excited. You know, Chris is one of the most interesting guys on the show right now. Chris, who did have this really difficult break with what happened to his mom. We've already covered this, that Travis doesn't really let him say goodbye. That's really going to rub somebody raw. That's going to be a hard thing to get over. We saw in the second episode of this season when he's hanging out at the compound where the son is like, hey, check this out. We can shove pickaxes into walker heads and it's really cool. And Chris seems to be really, really into it. So much so that he goes into the fuselage in this episode and he starts clearing things out. And then he runs into this not dead guy who's very clearly going to die at some point soon. And he decides that the merciful thing to do is to pull a page out of the Daddy Manawa playbook. And he's going to pull Eliza on this guy, except he does it poorly. And then he kind of just like does it very, very aggressively. And it seems like, I don't know, like, I don't know what he was trying to do there. Is it because he's liking killing people? Is that the thing that we need to be worried about? Was he trying to be merciful the way that his father was merciful? I don't know, but it was very interesting. I thought that was fun, compelling stuff.
I think he likes it.
I think he might like
it. He's kind of into it.
He's like, wow, did you see that guy with like the back sticking out? That was so gross. And then I killed him. It was really great.
Yeah. I think Chris could be Negan by the time we get to the regular season six of The Walking Dead.
Is he Segan?
Segan.
Yeah, Chris is Segan.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is Segan from the future, and that is who was shooting at Sawyer and Juliet in the fifth season of Lost.
Yeah. So I do wonder if maybe we're going to see Chris maybe taking more to Daniel as like an adopted father of somebody who is more his speed.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I mean, we definitely have seen some bonding between these guys in the past. Like, they had their big kind of Fisher trip moment, right? Like, we were seeing that Salazar was showing Chris how to do stuff. And Chris, like, yeah, I've been on a couple fishing trips before. And they're sort of bonding about everything. And Chris saying, like, I'm really sorry about what happened to your wife. And Salazar saying, I'm really sorry about what happened to your mom. And now here they are in that away mission. And they're kind of bonding here a little bit. I think that could be something. I could see that. I could see Chris being an honorary Salazar. That might be an upgrade.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, we have Nick, who ends up somehow incredulously falling into, as Chris Jericho called it, the Sarlacc pit.
Yes. Oh, my God. That was also on Tatooine.
Yes. Yes. Everything's on Tatooine.
Everything's on Tatooine.
And he ends up falling in there, and then he has a close call with one of these zombies, or the infected, as they say on Fear the Walking
infected.
Dead.
Yeah.
And then he ends up getting to figure out the whole, like, zombie guts thing.
Right.
But then he's like, he has this thing where he is, I don't know if you want to call it adrenaline junkie, but it's almost like he is really getting high off of the danger now.
It's a thing, and it's dangerous. I mean, pretty much being addicted to just about anything is not great. You know, he was very, very into heroin. He was into drugs. He had that whole thing that was going on in the first season. It seems like he has mostly shaken that free, but he's trading it for close encounters with walkers, crab walkers in some cases as well. And it's just, it's not great. Because, you know, you don't cover yourself up in enough guts and you go face to face up against one of these walkers the way that he did in this episode, and your face is just going to get bitten off immediately. You got to be really worried about Nick. Nick has to kick this habit soon. Otherwise, we could be saying goodbye to the grandpa jacket for good.
Because so much was made in The Walking Dead season 6 mid-season where it was like, hey, all right, we're going to do the zombie guts trick, but everybody has to act like a walker. If right. anybody, you know, flips the script at all or acts any different, or if Sam starts saying, mommy, mommy,
Mom.
Then the jig is up. We'll all just be killed. Where right. Nick here, he has the guts on him and he's like screaming in a walker's face. Nothing happens.
Nothing happens. Well, it's because he smells good to these walkers. The walkers are like, oh, one of us. I would be screaming at you too.
Yeah.
These Whoa. Walkers are always getting in each other's faces.
I thought that the blocking of that whole scene where all of a sudden, like, you know, 50 walkers just come over the horizon. I don't know where they came from necessarily or what exactly.
Jabba's palace.
It seems like nobody is here in this desert, yet all the walkers, just this horde just comes up over the hill. And then I don't really know exactly how everybody just got blocked into one spot. And then Nick just seemingly comes out of nowhere also.
Out of nowhere. No, he and I, you know what? I wish that we had gotten to see a little bit more of the discovery of the fact that this guts thing works. I mean, I know that we already know that from watching the proper Walking Dead, but that information hadn't been conveyed yet on Fear of the Walking Dead. I feel like for Nick to, you know, for us to really see Nick's discovery of that and to really kind of marinate in that, I feel like would have been better than just for him to suddenly emerge. It felt a little strange to me. But good for Nick. Good for Nick saving the day. You know, Nick has been a lot more useful this season than he was in the first one.
Yeah. Also, then Nick and Alicia have this really bizarre hug, I felt like, during the midst of this whole zombie chase, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they stop down to hug it out. And you know me, Rob. I love hugs.
Long-ass hug, though.
I'm always up for hugs, but probably not so much when you're about to get eaten by flesh-hungry monsters. You might want to save the hug for when you're back on the JSS Abigail.
Now, in going through all of the suitcases and everything, all the luggage that was from the flight, a couple of the characters found this rosary. And Daniel threw it away. Ultimately, Nick comes back with the rosary. First, is this Carol's rosary?
This is it. Yeah, this is the origin story of Carol's rosary. We're going to see how they lose it at sea. It's going to drift. We're going to get a 90-minute flashback of the rosary as it drifts over to the Washington, D.C. area. And Carol is going to discover it and use it to kill some saviors.
Right, so Nick ends up with the rosary by the end of the episode. Does that mean anything to you?
In terms of how it connects with Walking Dead or just thematically, just generally?
Well, I don't think it actually connects with Walking Dead, but it might be interesting to juxtapose the meaning of it because we spent a lot of time here in season 6 of the regular Walking Dead about what did the rosary mean for Carol. But what do you think it means for Nick?
I think for Nick, you know, Nick is a guy who has basically the entire time that we've known this character has straddled this line between light and dark. He has been somebody that has tons of demons in his life, now has literal demons in his life as he is, you know, battling it out here in the apocalypse. And I think that when he's been sober, when he's been clean, when he's been honest, which is rare because he, you know, part of his problem is an honesty problem. But when he has been those things, I feel like he has been a useful, valuable member of this group. Now this season, we are seeing him, you know, continue to have those sort of moral battles and those emotional battles, the psychological battles of him being somebody who, you know, he has to look in the mirror and really loathe what he sees. I feel like, you know, that's the kind of guy he seems to be. Now having this moment at the end where he is, you know, coming into contact with this symbol of peace and this symbol of, you know, of hope, you know, in this rosary, you know, does that signify that he is somebody that's going to be able to burst through to the light and get away from some of this stuff? Hopefully, because the guy that we see when he's cleaned up, when he's not covered in proverbial gore and sometimes literal gore as well, I feel like that's a really good, useful character. And hopefully he can get there. And hopefully, I mean, that's kind of what we saw with Carol in season 6 of the regular Walking Dead, even though we loved the Carol who was like a total brutal badass who just, you know, killed anybody that moved. I think for her at that point in her life, it had become way too much and she needed a change. Viewers might disagree that she needed a change, but I think she felt she needed a change. And I think for Nick, this would be welcome. I think it would be a welcome change if he was able to just like kind of let some light into his life and really let that guide him. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where it goes with Nick.
But I feel like that with Nick, that he's trending in this very dangerous direction. And then having the rosary, I feel like, is sort of flying in the face of where his character seems to be going.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that it could, you know, it could be a sign of things to come. It could be a sign that things are going to take a good turn for him at some point. But right now, he is definitely in the midst of some danger, and he masks it as being useful. You know, he masks it as, oh yeah, I was just like going to swim to the thing and check out what's in there and bring some supplies back. But really, I do think that he is just getting a real thrill from all of the excitement of being so close to the edge of death, which is what really marked, you know, his whole life, or all of the life that we had seen of him in season 1, at least.
Which one of the Manawa Clark clan do you feel like is most at risk here in Fear the Walking Dead season 2? Would you say Chris or Nick?
Oh, man, because you got to figure Alicia is going to be okay here.
Yeah, no real problems emerge other than talking to strangers.
That's really not great. And, you know, it's not great in the real world. And it is especially dangerous, I feel like, in the post-apocalyptic world. I feel like the show is invested a lot in Nick. I think that Nick is, I don't know that there's a poster boy or a poster character for this show yet. You know, certainly not in the way that Walking Dead has a few candidates in like a Daryl Dixon. I'm certainly not saying that Nick is the Daryl Dixon of Fear of the Walking Dead. But I do think that when you think about characters from Fear of the Walking Dead, I think that Nick has to be a top three person that comes to mind, right?
For our top three favorite characters?
No, I'm not saying top three favorite. I'm saying top three.
He is an iconic character in this show.
That's what I'm saying. It's like when you're thinking of the people who just immediately come to mind when you were thinking about Fear of the Walking Dead, I feel like Nick is a top three candidate. I think that he just shows up. You think about the grandpa jacket. You think about him doing his weird sort of Johnny Depp walk. I feel like that's a character that the show has invested a lot in. Whereas with Chris, we're kind of like getting the same arc that befell his mother. Like, you know, Liza really started activating and becoming this cool, confident, badass character right near the end of the first season. And then she's bitten, then she's shot, and then she's dead. Is that where we're going with Chris? And would that really, really break Travis? And does that push Travis into a darker direction? I could see that more easily than I could see something happening to Nick.
We haven't talked very much about Maddie at all yet in this episode, and that she's sort of really without too much to do other than waiting for Travis to fix the boat. But she's sort of wrestling with what Daniel says before he goes on the field trip where, hey, Strand is taking us to Mexico, but I don't know why. What's going on in Mexico? And she sort of calls out Strand for that. Do you feel like that Maddie is justified in what she's asking? Because, I mean, again, go back to Strand's rules. It is his boat.
It is his boat. But that being said, like, you gotta at least know where you're going. Like, it's, you know, yeah, I'll give you a ride. Okay, a ride to where? And if you know where the destination is, can't you just share that information with us? Can't you tell us we're going to Mexico? I might need to get my passport renewed. That would be valuable information to have. I think that she's justified in asking that question, especially because they are really putting their lives into this guy's hands. And when he is not being super forthcoming with all of the details, I think that that gives you a right to be very concerned about this guy. And yeah, it is his boat. But as she says, like, if you look at my family the wrong way, even once, I'm going to throw you overboard. I'm going to kick you off of this boat. And Strand's like, yeah, right. You're not going to do that. There's no way. You're not a killer, Maddie. And I wonder if that's the journey of Madison this season. Is she going to be somebody who is willing to make a hard call like that against somebody like Strand or somebody else? As far as them endangering her family, would she be willing to go all the way and become a killer here and throw somebody overboard?
Not to be overlooked, Daniel's daughter is still on this show. Vestigial Ophelia.
Oh, yeah.
She's been dealing with, what, some sort of a infection? Josh, do you think, is this Chekhov's infection? Do we think that Daniel potentially could lose Ophelia here?
This is the thing that's really tough about this show is I feel like there is, you know, there's some dead weight in the cast. There's some Fear of the Walking Dead weight in the cast. And I feel like Ophelia is probably the top example. All due respect to Mercedes Mason, who seems like a fantastic individual and a solid actor. But as Ophelia, she just doesn't have a story. She had a little bit of a story with the military boyfriend in the first season. Then that guy shoots her in the shoulder and she's, you know, she survives that, but she's clearly still struggling here. I feel like if she were to die, that really breaks Salazar. You got to think like that really puts Salazar in a really bad spot where he already lost his wife. Now we're going to see him lose his kid. Can we afford to put a character like Salazar through that? At the same time, you know, you kind of want to lose some of these characters eventually because it's the apocalypse and it's The Walking Dead. And that's what's supposed to happen in a show like this, especially when you're at such an early stage in the apocalypse. But is it going to be a show breaker to kill somebody like that? Is it a character breaker for Salazar to lose Ophelia? Do you think that Salazar could rebound from that loss, or would we really be in the weeds for a little while of having lost this character that we as the viewers don't necessarily care about that much, but is super connected to one of the characters that we think is the coolest character on the show?
I think we'll be fine. I think that these characters...
I think we'll be fine. I think you and I will be fine.
I think we need to have some loss here.
I think so too.
Especially that Ophelia, when Daniel isn't around, she's not even in the mix in any of these scenes. Like, we didn't even see her. Daniel's on the field trip, it wasn't like Ophelia was like, she's not allowed to talk to Maddie or Travis or Strand or anything like that.
Well, Nick showed up. He's like, hey, you got an infection. I could tell because I'm creepy like that.
Yeah, after they were back, you know.
Yeah, so, that was really it, though.
But it's like, okay, well, Daniel's not around, so like just go to bed, Ophelia.
Right. Yeah, she couldn't even go on the away mission. That felt like, you know, that was like where all the at-risk youths were. You would think that she'd be able to go on that mission.
She's got to be at the top of any Fear the Walking Dead death draft you're doing these days,
which we haven't done, which I feel like we should do.
Yeah, well, I think she's the number one pick
on the board, so you and I would have to RPS for first pick.
Yes, I guess so. Who's the number two pick then?
Number two pick on the board as it stands with all of the main characters in the mix. I mean, it's hard. I feel like it's really hard to tell who's going to die on this show. Like, who can this show afford to lose? I feel like maybe, you know, Chris has to be in the conversation, this new character, Alex, but you got to imagine that she is going to have a little bit of room to make it if she's just been introduced as a main character.
Yeah.
Strand, I don't want that to happen. I don't want to will that into existence.
No, definitely not. But I do think that Strand, I would say, is probably the second most likely character to die.
Yeah, that would suck, but I could see it.
Yeah, okay. All right, Josh.
After some redemption or no redemption for Strand?
Maybe not. Maybe trying to pull one over on the Salazar-Clark clan and then ultimately having a, you know, Chris takes him out or something like that.
Wow. You think that he's just like really going to try and con these guys?
Nick has to take him out. That's what
happens. Oh, yeah. Wow. That's like Nick's ultimate arc move, is like he really has to come after these people and protect them from evil Strand.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Josh, anything else from this week's Fear of the Walking Dead?
No, not really. I mean, we are now, I assume we are basically finished with all of the Flying Dead stuff, except for Alex still being out there. How quickly are we going to get her back into the mix?
I mean, I think that we're going to probably see her. Maybe she gets picked up by Segan or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we will see her again.
Yeah.
Okay. Next week's episode is called Blood in the Streets. Do you have any sort of a sense of what's going on next week?
Are they going to hit the streets? They're going to go back to a city?
Yeah. The synopsis.
There's no streets out on the sea, I don't think.
The group lets a family in distress board the Abigail. Why?
Oh, Strand is going to be up to his eyeballs in fury next week. Indignant Strand is on his way.
He's really pissed.
He's going to be so mad about that. A whole family?
Yeah.
You let an entire family onto this boat.
Do you know exactly how the season is going to run? It looks as though they're going to be 15 episodes, it says, on IMDb. Maybe it's only 13.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be like a 7 and 8 split.
7 and 8 split. So we're going to like split over the summer and then do 8 weeks to get ready before regular Walking Dead?
Yeah, it sounds right to me.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Okay. So we will see exactly how that goes. All right.
Well, Segan.
Josh, what's the hashtag here?
Oh, man. Did you write down anything good?
About Fear the Walking Dead Wait.
Uh-huh. I got that. I had Crab Walkers.
Crab Walkers. You call it.
Let's do Crab Walkers.
Crab Walkers. It's shorter. All right.
Crab Walkers. Crab Walkers.
So we're a little bit trying to figure out how to best cover all this. Of course, we're doing all of our Game of Thrones coverage on Sunday night, and then we get to Fear the Walking Dead on Monday morning. But we do want to hear from you guys, so please send us your emails. You can use our same Walking Dead email address for your Fear the Walking Dead feedback. That's twd@postshowrecaps.com, and we'd love to get your questions and comments about Fear the Walking Dead.
That's the best way to do it. Definitely want to hear from you. Don't want to feel like we're adrift at sea all alone.
That's right. That's right.
We want your messages in the bottles sent to our JSS Abigail.
All right. We're looking forward to hearing your comments on Post Show Recaps. Of course, you could check out our Game of Thrones coverage all on postshowrecaps.com and see everything that Josh is writing for THR over on Twitter @RoundHoward.
That's right. That's me.
That's right. I'm @RobSestrino. Josh, anything else?
Yeah, man. In addition to all of the Game of Thrones stuff we're doing, in addition to these Fear of the Walking Dead podcasts, we're actually launching a new podcast on Post Show Recaps this week, Rob.
Another new podcast?
Another
new podcast. I'm like, Strand. No, we have enough podcasts.
No more podcasts on this ship. The JSS Post Show Recaps is proud to add some Mr. Robot coverage is coming your way with myself and Antonio Mazzaro. Mr. Robot Season 2 is coming in a couple of months. July 13, I believe, is the season 2 premiere date. We did not cover Mr. Robot when it first came out, so we're going to go back and we are going to fix that. Antonio and I are going to bring a new recap of every single episode from the first season every week. We're going to talk about that from a spoiler-free perspective for the majority of the podcast, and we're also going to talk a little bit about spoilers at the end of each podcast, so it should be fun for people who've never seen the show before, as well as for people who have seen the show and need a little bit of a refresher. Very excited about that. I think Mr. Robot's one of the best shows on TV. Can't wait to talk about it with Antonio.
All right, looking forward to that. Can't wait to hear what you guys have to say on postshowrecaps.com. Of course, you can subscribe to Post Show Recaps. Go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. Get everything that we're doing on Post Show Recaps. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.